We at this moment are thinking about one of the stories that Jesus told in His ministry. Of course, we don't call them stories. We call them what the Bible calls them, parables. They're actually illustrations. I know from your great preachers, you have already learned that the word parable means something thrown alongside a biblical truth. It was an illustration. Now we're turning to Luke chapter 15, and we're studying what's called frequently the parable of the prodigal son. And in doing so, we're doing three things each day. First, we're reading the story. Then second, we're looking at one of the key characters of the story. And then third, we're looking at the story in its context. And then fourth, we're focusing on a lesson or two that we can learn from the story. Yesterday we read the story and focused on the first of three main characters. And we looked at the story itself and its three basic scenes, and then made some application to our lives. Let's see how we did. We looked at the story and said there are three main scenes. Scene number one is called the... They all start with a C. Scene number one is called the... Consumer. Great. Scene number two is called the... The compassionate. And scene number three is called the... Critic. Now yesterday we focused on scene number one, character number one, the consumer, and that would be the prodigal son himself. Today we're going to focus on scene number two, character number two, the compassionate, and that will be the father. So we'll read the story, we'll think about the father, and we're going to focus on... We're going to set the story into its context and see the setting. We'll read the story, we'll look at the setting of the story, put our finger on the pulse of what's going on in the background, and then we're going to think about that father and some lessons we can learn from the father in the story. Here we read it again. Luke 15, beginning with verse 11. A certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me." So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions in prodigal living. By the way, the word translated prodigal is a word that literally means unsaved. Unsaved living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me one of your hired servants.'" Now pause for a moment. Dan, in a minute, you have a strong voice, and I'm going to ask you to read Luke 15, verses 18 and 19, and specifically the rehearsed speech that he was going to give to his father. I'm going to read it again, and Dan's going to read it for us in a minute when I ask for it. Here's the rehearsed speech. "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants." That's the speech that he rehearsed that he was going to say to his daddy. So verse 20, "He arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, Bring out the best robe. Put it on him. Put a ring on his hand. Sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf. Bring the fatted calf here and kill it. Let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and he began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf." But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, "Lo, these many years I've been serving you. I've never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you're always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we would make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found." So we've read the story. Now, second this afternoon, let's put the story into its context and look at the setting. Yesterday at this time, we looked at the story itself and the three scenes. Now, let's look at the setting. Why did Jesus tell the story? I go all the way back to the first verse of the chapter. "Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him," Jesus, "to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.' So he spoke this parable to them, saying," and he actually told three parables or stories: "The lost sheep, the lost silver, and this, the lost son." So in the setting of the parable of our interest, we have three different groups of individuals or an individual that needs our attention. First of all, you had individuals that came to Jesus wanting a solution for the sin in their lives. Verse 1 calls them tax collectors and the sinners. Tax collectors. These were individuals that literally purchased or rented the right from the Roman Empire to collect taxes among their fellow Jews. They were utterly despised because they abused their privilege. The Roman Empire said, "This is the quota of taxes that we want from your province. Anything else you collect is yours." And so they would go out and they would collect what the empire requested, and then they would levy all sorts of other taxes against their fellow Jews, and they would pad their pocketbook with them. We read about a man like that in a few chapters later, Luke 18 and 19. His name was Zacchaeus. And he talks about how he had taken things he shouldn't have taken from his fellow Jews. So these guys were despised. But it's the tax collectors and the sinners, these individuals that were legalized extortionists, tax collectors and sinners. And these weren't the sinners that didn't read their Bible as often as they should. You could go back to Matthew's account, and in Matthew, they're called tax collectors and harlots, prostitutes. These were the worst sinners of sinners that came to Jesus. And verse 1 says they came near to him to hear him. They wanted to know what he could do for their sinful lives. They wanted a solution for sin. The second group that we see on this occasion would be the Pharisees and the scribes. The scribes. In Luke chapter 5, the scribes are called lawmen. You remember Gunsmoke? Raise your hand. Ah, you're dating yourself. Do you remember Festus? Boy, you're really dating yourself now, because that's way back when. You remember how he would come with his stiff leg and he would say, "Marsha Dillon, Marsha Dillon, Marsha Dillon." Marsha Dillon was the law man. He was the man of the law, right? Well, in Luke chapter 5, scribes are called men of the law. They're called lawmen. And that's what they did. They went back to Old Testament scriptures. They would see what God said, and then they would formulate all of these man-made laws that they expected their fellow Jews to obey. And those were called the traditions of the fathers. So they were lawmen. The Pharisees, the word is believed by some to mean the separated ones. These were the individuals that elevated themselves above their other Jews as the ones who marched in lockstep with the scribes and obeyed all their man-made traditions and would look down at any other Jew that failed to do so. And so they were the legalists of the day. These individuals wanted isolation from sinners, because when they saw Jesus keeping company with the sinners, they criticized and complained. The third group of individuals was really just one individual, and that's Jesus Himself. And whereas the tax collectors and sinners wanted a solution for sin, and whereas the scribes and Pharisees wanted isolation from the sinners, Jesus gave people the heart of God, and He provided them reconciliation for the sinful. Now that's in the background of this story. Isn't it interesting that all three characters represent all three of those connections to sin? You see, the prodigal son symbolized the tax collectors and sinners in their unsaved ways. The older brother, as we're going to see tomorrow, represented or symbolized the scribes and Pharisees who were overly critical about what Jesus was doing for the sinners. And the father, as we're going to see in just a minute, represented or symbolized the heart of Jesus on this occasion, who was taking the compassion of God to these people who needed forgiveness. All three of these characters in the story represent someone in the background of the story being told. I'm going to pause for a moment and ask you a question. Are you like the prodigal son, a tax collector and sinner needing a solution for sin today? Are you an older critical brother, a scribe and Pharisee, criticizing people because of sin in their lives today? Or are you like the father of this story and Jesus on this occasion wanting to help people with sin in their lives today? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you, you fall into one of those three categories. Now, having read the story and having looked at the setting of the story, we're now ready to look at another character of the story, and that would be the second one in the story as it unfolds, the Father, the compassionate. I want you to read with me again what the Father did and see if there's something that we can learn here from the compassionate, the Father. As I go back to verse 20, verse 20 says, the boy arose and came to his father. Now watch what the father did. First of all, but when he was still a great way off, his father, first of all, saw him. The Greeks had a lot of words for see. See with the eye, blepo. See with the mind and connect the dots, theoreo, theorize. But the word here is orao, and it's a word that means to see with a sense of comprehension. And the idea is the father sees this boy from afar off, and he sees that someone on the distant horizon, and wait a minute, it caused a second look. Hold up. He looked even closer. There was something about the silhouette. There was something about the gait of the stride. There's something familiar about that. Is that? Could that be? Oh, it's my son! And he saw him from afar off. The first thing the father did was he gave attention to somebody that needed his help. Now here's the second thing the daddy did. His father saw him and had compassion on him. Compassion. Passion means strong emotion. The preface or prefix com means together. To have strong emotion together with. Now, you don't see this in the translation, but actually it translates a verb that means this is not something that the daddy did. This translates a verb that means this is something that was done to the daddy. He couldn't help himself. What he saw, the plight of his son, overwhelmed him with compassion. And so first, he gave attention to the sinner. Second, he gave his emotions to the sinner. Here's the third thing that this daddy did. He ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. He ran to the sinner. He didn't wait for the sinner to come to him. He didn't put a marquee sign out the side, out on the front porch and say, "Welcome, come attend on Sunday morning. Services at 10 o'clock. He went to the sinner. Amen? And when he got to him, it says he fell on his neck and kissed him. The Greek word that is translated and kissed him literally means love down. Loved him down. You ever remember those commercials where two individuals saw each other at a distance and in slow motion they run to each other and then they open up their arms and they embrace and they twirl around. You see that? What you have here is a daddy running to his boy, and man, he's not in slow motion either. He's running to his son and he opens up his arms to embrace, and the inertia is so strong when they embrace, they literally fall down. They fell down in love. And what I see here is I see an expression of concern for a sinner. Sinners in this world will not care how much you know until what? You got it. They know how much you care. Well, the daddy does one more thing. There is the attention he gave the boy, the emotions that he felt for the boy, the expression of concern he gave to the boy, and now there's an elevation of the boy. As we keep reading, the son said to him, "Okay, Dan, I want you now to go back to the rehearsed speech in verses 18 and 19, and I want you to start reading what the boy had rehearsed to say. Go.
Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son."
Hold up. Hold up a minute. Wait a minute. Bring out the best robe, put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. Now, you didn't finish the rehearsed speech, did you? Because the rest of it was what?
"Make me like one of your hired servants."
The boy came with a rehearsed speech and he said, "I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Just make me a servant." And before he could even finish that rehearsed speech, the daddy didn't make him as one of the servants. What did he do? He put a robe of royalty on his shoulders. He put a signet ring of the family on his hands. And whereas servants went around barefooted, he put sandals on the boy's feet. He welcomed him back into the family. He elevated him. He was dead. He's alive. He was lost. He's found. Let's celebrate. You reckon there's a lesson there for us?
Yes,
Don't we need to be giving attention to people in the world who've made bad decisions and invited sin into their lives? Haven't you made bad decisions before? Don't we need to emotionally involve ourselves in their lives and feel with them over the difficulties that their sins have brought to them? Don't we need to have an expression of our love and concern to them by the way we treat them? And don't we need to take the grace of God and share it with them and elevate them up from the cesspool of their past and put them right there as joint heirs with Jesus Christ because of their forgiveness? Wow, there are some lessons that we can learn here, aren't there? So you may be like the prodigal. You may be a tax collector and sinner. You may at this very moment be someone that really needs a solution for sin in your life. Hopefully, the rest of us will be like the Father and will want to give you some attention, let you know that we love you with the love of Jesus, want to help you and lift you up. I want to be like this Father, don't you? You see, as we close, this is a misnomer because this story is not about the prodigal son at all. The whole story, and we're going to see this tomorrow when we note its significance, the whole story is really about not the prodigal son, but the merciful Father. And that's the way Jesus approached people in His day. And with the heart of Jesus, the way we need to interact with people in our day. Let's carry on one more time tomorrow, okay? Thank you.